Help DEA keep our communities safe and healthy by participating in National Prescription Drug Takeback Day, Saturday, October 25th. Take action right in your own home by cleaning out your medicine cabinet of unneeded medications. Keep them safe, clean them out, take them back. Find a collection site near you at DEATakeback.com. Do your part to lower overdose deaths and prevent prescription drug misuse before it starts. That's DEATakeback.com.
Hello and welcome to the Undercut Podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Jesse Billington, and we are back to preview this weekend's Belgian Grand Prix. And when I say we, I mean all three of us. I'm joined by none other than Mr. Timo Albus Daly and Miss Ellie Mae Taylor. How are you both?
You mean all four?
Four. Okay. Yeah, Ellie Mae's got a cat with her as well. Apache has joined the podcast recording this evening.
Although it probably won't contribute too much in the grand scheme of conversation, but is there for moral support, perhaps? Maybe an emotional support animal for steak. They need it at this point.
Yeah, they need a little bit of comfort and a guiding hand towards anything but a mediocre result.
Anyway, yes, I'm rather good, and Amy just seems to be distracted with cats. So I think that's probably meaning she's good as well.
They're fighting. He likes to just, I don't know, be annoying to them, and Lola likes to scream at him.
Oh, he's breaking free. There we go. Anyway, cat drama out the way. Might as well jump onto the main part of this podcast. And we'll jump into the news first. And of course, this is something we touched on in our review of the Hungarian Grand Prix. And this is Mattia Binotto joining Audi. And he'll be joining as their CEO and CTO for the team, and it's effective August 1st, so this will be coming into place essentially through the summer break. And this means that Andrea Seidel and I can't remember the other chap's first name, Hoffman, are out, and rumours now grow that Mike Crack could also be set to join the outfit, vacating his spot at Aston Martin, which is all very interesting.
It's all very strange, I think, because particularly the thing about Crack's, because it seems to have quite a decent thing going for him. It's not necessarily going as well as they want it to, but it's not steak, not Audi, so, you know, feel like an unnecessary challenge when you're already in the middle of doing one job. Why not try and see that through first before doing something else? I find it interesting that Seidel and Hoffman have both gone, and I hope that they find someone to be the actual CEO, and that it's not Binotto in the long term, and this is a short-term appointment, because he is someone who I think is better off in just the CTO role. I think we discussed this when it was announced that he was leaving Ferrari way back at the tail end of last year. It feels a lot longer ago than that at this point. I think I'm not even 100% convinced that he did leave at the end of last year. It feels that long ago. Because I think that's where he went wrong with Ferrari. It was trying to do too much at once and spread a bit thin. And that's the last thing a new team, in essence, needs when they're trying to capitalize essentially on a changing of the regulations of this scale. So it's all a bit, I'm not sure if I like it yet. Not this whole Audi thing seems to be, there's a lot of potential, there's a lot of capabilities, but nothing they're doing so far has made me go, ooh, interesting. It's just gone, ooh, interesting.
Yeah, I've kind of had the same sentiments in the, I mean, Audi has obviously set the target of winning races within 3 years of its entry, so they must have thought Seidel was no longer the person to get them through that sort of trajectory, but
which is a bit of a pisser if you're side or leaving McLaren for this long-term project and then you get kicked out before it even really starts.
Yeah, but it's more the case of, do I think Binotto can do that? And I don't know. I don't want to be pessimistic, but I've always thought that, a bit like you, Timo, that Binotto is better off, I'd say, even in a sort of slightly lower ranks again. I mean, I say lower, but someone's like, sort of like a technical director, or who has sort of a stronger role in engineering than sort of the logistics of a whole team. But I guess we'll see. Perhaps his management style didn't work with how Ferrari do things, and with a different set of people, perhaps he can actually maybe thrive instead.
Yeah, the Binotto was at his best, I'd say, when he was doing engine work for Ferrari back under the old Schumacher days, and with Jean Todt leading, that was sort of his forte, and that was where he was at home in the team and able to produce some fantastic work, leading a very technical side of the team that fell sort of buried within the bowels of the operation. I think he was moved up too quickly to a sort of part of the team that was way beyond his initial remit and his sort of personal want of capability. And the results that we often saw from Ferrari sort of accidentally solidified him that he might or should be there. You look at some of the results that were achieved in the latter part of the Leclerc-Vettel era, they were relatively decent. But then, of course, that was sort of fraudulent engines and all sorts of weird reasons that sort of went, okay, so he's not doing too badly. And then it sort of all fell apart a bit and sort of. I think the veil was lifted at that point, and people realized actually maybe Binotto ought to have just stayed making the engines for the team. So it's an interesting one. I'm hoping that Audi don't fumble it. And they've already produced engines, they've got Mule engines put together. They're making progress when it comes to the technical side of things. And hopefully, he's going to be brought in to sort of help glue it all together. When it comes to the rest of the roles and chief officers and everything, and so on and so forth. I'm hoping that Audi does something smart with this because arguably Seidel was brought in to work on the Audi project. He wasn't brought in to sort of run the remainder of Sauber. He was brought in to get Audi ready. And we haven't seen results from that yet because Audi hasn't emerged. So it seems a bit almost premature that he's been terminated in my mind.
That's why I was saying before, it's that difference in tone with when I go, "Ooh, interesting." It's the wrong one. I don't want to be doing that because it was already. I hope it's not going in the way that I thought immediately when it was announced that they were coming in, because you had that announcement that Audi are joining Formula One. You go, "Ooh," and they go, "They're taking over Sauber." Like, oh, so it's already kind of following in that footstep of this was really exciting. Oh, it's not quite as good as we thought it was. And they're not even there yet. And in terms of trying to hype people up for it, they're not quite there, it feels like. And it's really weird to have this conversation so in depth about them when they haven't even done anything. They're not even there yet. And you're already just unexcited by it when it's such a massive manufacturer coming in. And I just think that shows the fundamental problem with it all is that it nothing feels like it should do when you've got a new, potential new team coming in. So it's going to be really interesting to see how it turns around, because you hope it turns around.
But you play that
I think
against the
we've got.
optimism that there was for Andretti coming in as a team, and everyone going, "Oh, Andretti would be amazing." You think they're maybe bringing Cadillac with them as an engine supplier, and they're bringing in the sort of technical might that have been able to put together decent Indy cars across the years, and they'll be opening up seats for new drivers. And the excitement that they were able to bring was completely counter to
Well,
what
yeah, that's
Audi
that
had
was
brought.
kind of what you wanted from Audi, but you never got, and they denied that one, and so it's weird the parallels there. Ellie May, you were going to say something.
I was just going to say, I think we've got to trust the process. Audi have pedigree. It's not like they're coming from nothing.
Which I think is why I'm not totally pessimistic about it. It's just nothing they've done yet makes me go, ooh, it's all kind of, I'm not sure yet, but again, it's weird, like I said, to have this conversation so early because nothing's actually happened yet, which is also a good point for the next piece of news where we found out that the restructured points plan has been blocked by all the teams. Thank the Lord, and any other god that you prefer to worship in the meantime.
Yeah, this one's a an interesting one. The original proposal would see a potential extension of the points scoring positions down the order. There was rumor that it might be down to 15th, 14th, or possibly even down to the bottom of the field. And this was sort of brought around early on in the season by mid-running teams. But those mid-running teams are now sort of regularly appearing in the points. The pressure is sort of lifted on them to actually do something. They're getting a reward for their results, as it were. And it's sort of been scrapped. All the teams have gone, yeah, no, we'll leave it as competitive as it is. We need to have something to actually fight for, and equally something that designates the fact that we've essentially lost this weekend. So it's an interesting sort of agreement on the teams to remain being incredibly competitive, which I think for the overarching theme of the sport is fantastic. One of the other interesting points that was unveiled from this weekend was also the maximum driver weight limit has been lifted to 82 kilos from 80, which means that I'm ever more closer to being an F1 driver. But
Not
also,
gonna happen.
it's sort of sparking rumors that there's going to be sort of changes in car weight limits as we move towards the new sort of series of production, and quite what this is going to mean when we're sort of looking at going, okay, why do we need heavier drivers? Are they going to be more muscly to try and control a new series of car? What's this opening up? Or is this simply sort of opening up a greater range of diversity, taking an added pressure off the drivers? There's something that's led to this, and I'm curious as to what that part is.
I took it to mean that they were sort of taking off some of the pressure of the drivers to keep their weight down so that they remain healthy, because you've got to think how much weight they can lose throughout a race. You've got to then look at, you know, races like Qatar. You want enough weight on them that they're able to sort of stay, sort of be durable throughout the race, without having, you know, the health issues that some of them did. So I took it that it was trying to sort of help ease that than it being that anything else.
It's an interesting one that possibly the health side of things is important. I think that it opens up a bit more of that freedom for the drivers to have one less thing to deal with on their sort of plates when it comes to sort of structure and training and so on. But yeah, I still remain curious.
They also, in that meeting, agreed that maternity and paternity leave is to remain excluded from the cost cap, as it would obviously disproportionately affect women employees, because teams would then have to be sort of paying the female and perhaps hiring as someone to cover that leave as well. If it was within the cost cap, it may have discouraged teams from hiring women of sort of childbearing age. And also, with the change of regulations for the 2026 season, they've also agreed that there'll be 3 3-day winter testing sessions, which I think for this one, there was only two, wasn't there? There was a private one in Spain, and then we had one in Bahrain.
I think the Spain days might have been filming days, but I thought we had 3 days of testing in Bahrain.
No, it's 3 3-days. So they get 9 in total, 9 days in total.
Oh.
But it's in three, yeah.
Oh, now that is interesting, because maybe I think there might have been closed door testing in Spain that we really didn't know about, but that is very interesting indeed. Oh, possibly where the new car is coming in, they don't want there to be this sort of weird failure that we had with some of the teams coming into the latest technical regulations to sort of go, this is the car we've got. We know very little about it. Let's go racing. They've sort of decided to try and rectify that this time round by going, this is the new car we've got. We at least know how it's going to behave a bit this time round. And it won't be sort of that first race of the season will be a proper first race, as opposed to sort of just extended testing going, we have no clue what the hell it's about to do. Best of luck out there. So that's possibly a smart move from Formula
also
1.
Also, the
like
potential
to
avoid a 20-car DNF in the first race of the season, because maybe they've got on top of the gremlin slightly more than potentially they would otherwise. As amusing as that would be.
It would also be interesting to see where they then have that winter testing, because obviously the past 2 years it's been Bahrain, and then it's almost the week after we've had then the first race of the season at Bahrain. But if they carry on with how they're then doing it next year, Australia's the first one, isn't it? So then perhaps Australia, depending on Ramadan, might be the first. Ramadan shouldn't be anywhere near it, should it? Is it every 9 months, Ramadan?
I couldn't tell you off the top of my head. I know it's
regardless, if they keep Australia to the start of the calendar, will they have their winter testing in Australia, or will they sort of keep it to Bahrain and then they move over to Australia? Or
I'd hope they'd maybe do it in Silverstone before they properly went over, kind of like they do Silverstone, then Spain, and then go off to wherever the first race of the season is, and they've got a third one depending on where that is. But in terms of replacement, just because of the proximity to most of the teams.
I'd say that Silverstone, though, is going to be too cold for winter testing. That's why sort of even Spain some years has been a bit cold for winter testing, and you've got sort of irrespective results. That was why Bahrain quickly came to be favoured, was it was relatively close to the temperatures you could expect through the rest of the season. Silverstone in February, March, probably February, given how early the season starts these days, is likely to be bitterly cold and absolutely stoking wet. So you're not going to get anything close to sort of respectability.
I just think it's impractical for a lot of other places, though, if you're thinking of where, like, even if they went back to Bahrain just for testing, it's technically on the way, I guess. But it just doesn't necessarily fit in with the whole environmental side of things of trying to keep things down, or they have to put extra effort into making it neutral and all the rest of it. It just seems it's going to be interesting to see. And again, it depends on what the calendar looks like, I suppose, because it'd be interesting to have test days on a street circuit, essentially, because I don't think we've really done that before, or not for a good while at the very least.
But the cost of setting up a street circuit would make that completely prohibitive. I think Bahrain would make the most sense if you're going to squeeze it in
I'm saying if Australia is the first race of the season, they just set it up earlier and they go testing there.
But again, it's the cost. They can't, you'd have to almost start paying Albert Park to do that, not getting Albert Park to pay you. The benefit
of
Bahrain
should.
Is
it's F1's privilege to go there. They should be very lucky to get to go to Albert Park every year. They should start cutting them some slack because it's a great venue.
Bahrain works because it's a permanent facility. Spain works because it's a permanent facility. They're going to almost certainly look at another permanent facility circuit because that's simply what makes the most practical sense. What I'd like to see is them go to a circuit that isn't on the F1 calendar. And that way, we don't have a race ruined because they already know what the testing data is like. It needs to be one that's relatively sort of reasonably close to an F1 circuit. And Bathurst does not have the right certification for it. And also, with that long straight,
it's
irrespective.
My thing yet again for it.
Well, if they do Spain, then do something like Portimao.
Yeah.
That's not very far.
Or they just do Spain twice.
Yeah.
Or that. Either way.
I mean, I assume two of them will be behind closed doors anyway, and we'll only see one of them, so.
Yeah. There's very much the likelihood of that. But anyway, that's all still to come. As we look a bit more towards this weekend, Max Verstappen has had to take a new engine from outside his pool for Spa, and this means he'll be taking a 10-place grid penalty. And this is something I'd speculated on post-Canada, I believe, when we caught wind of his engine failure being pretty terminal, and essentially Honda said, it's lost, by which case, I mean, the insides had probably gone nuclear or something. And the result is he's having to sort of look to outside of his engine pool to get that one fixed. And, well, I mean, it's unusual that we're seeing that from Honda and Red Bull. We were anticipating potentially engine failures coming from somewhere else, Alpine maybe. So we're seeing Red Bull really pushing to the limits this season, and we're starting to see reliability of these old iteration cars coming to the fore and biting where we weren't expecting.
I don't think it's going to make any difference for Verstappen at Spa, though, of all places. I think it's kind of lucky that he got it here, because we've seen what he's had to do from down the back of the grid in Spa before, and it's made absolutely no difference. I think there's, obviously, it's closer this year, but in the grand scheme of things, I think they have gone a little bit lucky, which is probably me cursing him for the weekend, but I don't mind doing that because it means we get an interesting Grand Prix. But I don't think it's going to be as bad as it could be somewhere else, like Zandvoort, for instance.
For me, I think it will be interesting to see how he makes it up the order compared to how Perez has been.
I think you know already how that's going to go.
Yeah, otherwise it's going to highlight a real big problem if Max, you know, can get back up to a podium.
It's only a problem for Perez.
Well, yes.
This is very true. It's not a problem we personally have to overcome, but it's opening up things a little bit as we go into the weekend. And another thing on Max Verstappen's plate is Helmut Marko's come down and said, get off that goddamn video game console. No more late night sim racing. It's been culled by the team. The defending world champion has agreed to put a stop to competing in sim racing events late at night before Grand Prix following the Hungarian weekend, where, of course, he was racing at the online
Spa
24 hours.
Things you wouldn't need to think that you'd have to say either, you know? Like, just be sensible and just go to bed. We're racing in Formula One tomorrow. Is that not good enough for you? Like, racing, you're literally... There's so many other times you could be doing this. Do it then.
Yeah, I think it's fair enough that they're clamping down on it. You know, he can do it outside of F1 weekends, fine, but he should be focusing on F1 when it's an F1 weekend.
And if you're going to do online sim racing, at least make it something a bit more fun and do Mario Kart, and then you'd probably get a bit more of a fun headline out of it.
Yeah, do what the Twitch quartet do and do like Euro Truck Simulator or Farming Sim or something. But
Farming Simulator would actually be quite good there, because you'd think, you know what, respect.
Yeah,
it's a quality game.
Quite enjoy watching them do that. But Helmut Marker in the statement did say that while he respects that Max Verstappen has his own schedule and his own sort of sleep schedule that he works off of across weekends that does allow for this to a certain extent, he thinks that ultimately staying up till 3 a.m. exhausting yourself doing a 24-hour sim race probably isn't the smartest thing to do ahead of a Grand Prix. And begrudgingly,
it's weird
I
when
do
you
rather
agree
agree
with
with
Helmut
him.
Marker.
That's sort of where I've got to with that one. Still on news ahead of this weekend, of course. Is it out yet? I can't remember if it's out yet. The new Deadpool Wolverine
Yes,
film.
it's out. Oh, the film, I don't know, but the livery definitely is.
Delivery is, yes. Yeah, that's what I was asking, if the film's out yet or if you've seen it or not. But if it's not out and you haven't seen it, no point in asking. But yes, Alpine have a livery for this weekend. It's going to look great on the maybe four laps we see it on Pierre Gasly's car before he retires. And it's sort of a tribute advertising livery for the new Deadpool Wolverine film. And you just know that Esteban Ocon is absolutely buzzing because he is a comic book nerd through and through.
That's the note I sort of have, that it's a good livery, but are they going to stay in a race long enough for us to appreciate it?
It's my steak problem all over again. It's like, I really like this livery. When do you see it? When Zane Maloney's driving in Formula 2, because I never see it in the F1. It's quite frustrating because it looks so much better than their normal livery that you think, after all of the kind of odd other liveries that they've had over the last years, and then they come out with this beauty and you go, ooh, and then you go, oh, Alpine, ah. Oh. Oh dear.
And as well, if it rains in Spa, it's such a dark liveried car. Like,
no one's going to see it, and you're going to have a Schumacher Coulthard situation.
Well, especially as drivers
because
come out to
least...
lap the Alpine.
Yeah. Because if you
Oh,
think.
There's a bold prediction. I might change mine, actually. There we go. Hang on a minute. You're going to like this in a minute. Continue talking.
At least teams like Mercedes have got sort of the teal turquoise to at least kind of be a little bit fluorescent or sort of seen a bit. Alpine, it's just complete in the dark with just
I know. I mean,
claws.
Look, we've got a decent special livery, and also bear in mind the curse of the special livery never goes well for a team when they're doing that. Think back to all the times that Red Bull, Mercedes, Ferrari have run special liveries, and everyone's gone, A, it looks pants. B,
especially when it's rained.
Yes. B, you've failed there completely. You've had a double DNF or something ridiculous.
The thing is it can't get worse, surely.
Oh, it's
it
Alpine.
Does if
They'll
you read
find a
my
way.
word prediction.
They will find a way. Speaking of predictions, we might as well jump into those then. So, pole position. And it's a clean sweep across the board, actually, for Lando Norris. We all seem to think he's going to do it again. He's going to get on pole. The question is, will he be leading into turn one? We'll wait and see.
No.
I also don't think he might be leading into turn one. I don't think he'll be leading coming out of turn one. That is sort of roughly the direction my predictions are going
well,
in.
Well, the problem is, as well, you never want to start on pole in Spa. You want to start in second.
Yeah, you get the better entry to turn one.
Which is why we've all put him in first place, which is hilarious for us.
Yeah, he'll be P7
like
by the time they get to the Kemmel Straight. Yeah, so Lando Norris on pole position. But crucially, when it comes to the podium, we've all got Piastri in second. Elime and Timo, you've got Verstappen in third. And then it sort of...
We've unwittingly coordinated there. I didn't realise.
And then it gets
a
bit chaotic. Elime, you think Lando Norris is finally going to win from pole? We'll start with that.
Yes, I do. It's, you know, if Oscar Piastri takes the lead of the race, he can, you know, swap. Seems
Lando,
what
Lando
McLaren
will have to
like
catch up to
to
him, though.
Well, but I do think it's amusing, Timo, how you put Charles Leclerc as who's going to win it, because then it's another one of those cases of, instead of Charles Leclerc getting pole and Max Verstappen converting it into the win, it's Lando Norris getting pole and Charles Leclerc.
I didn't think about that from that point of view. I just quite liked the idea of him winning in Spa. But now that you pointed out, I do kind of, if that happens, want to make the meme, what's it, from the Tom Hanks film where he kind of just looks at Norris and goes, "I'm Verstappen now." It's kind of, "I'm the one that's going to do this to you." Just
Captain Phillips.
Captain Phillips, that's the one. So Verstappen used to be doing that to Charles, going, "No, I'm going to win this race from your pole, not the you." And now Leclerc is going to get to do that to Norris.
Look at me. I am the pole stealer now. That's what it's going to be. That's what you're predicting. Piastri second place, the two of you. You reckon he's going to be having another solid weekend?
Yeah, it'd be all right, won't he?
Yeah.
Another missed...
He's a cool, he's a cool customer.
Another missed Pilates session for his mum.
Yeah, McLaren also have a really cute teddy with a McLaren anorak on sale.
They had a teddy bear at the Formula E as well, which is interesting.
It might be the same one. I kind of want it.
I think it's called Bruce.
That's what I named the car that we went rallying in. Bruce the Broop.
The TR4, yes, you did indeed. And then third place, you've both gone for Verstappen.
Yeah, because he'll still be fine and he'll make his way back up the grid and show that it can be done, and Perez will be languishing down somewhere. Like, oh, shit.
It pretty much that, yeah.
Fair enough. I've gone completely contra on everything bar the Piastri thing. I've gone for a Hamilton win. I reckon I agree with you on the fact that we're going to go for yet another race weekend with no Verstappen win. Hamilton's on good form. The Mercedes is looking decent, and I reckon they'll be able to bleed a fair amount of speed off of it. And he'll be able to sort of control a low grip car around that circuit pretty well indeed. Piastri second, flying high, doing well. Nicole Piastri is missing Pilates. And then third place, buoyed by the special livery, Ocon, third place. I don't know.
Is
I
it going to happen? Is it?
Look, if it doesn't happen, oh well. If it does, double celebration for me. I'll be happy.
When it doesn't happen.
We'll wait and see what happens. Fastest lap, however, we've all gone a little bit different here. Timo, I feel yours is the most obvious.
Yeah, but not necessarily at the same time, because I think Max Verstappen's going to get the fastest lap because he's not going to be able to get further up the grid than third. So there's going to be a big enough gap back to fourth, let's say, but he's not going to be able to have enough time left to go after Charles and Oscar. So he decides he's going to get that extra point and go fastest lap because it's been a little bit since he's had one.
Well, in theory, he's got the best engine on the grid. It's going to be the most... Also,
yeah, zesty.
That is also logic that I definitely thought about and didn't just realize when you said it just there.
Ellie May, then your fastest lap.
I've gone for George Russell because I always seem to go for a Mercedes driver. I seem to swap between Hamilton and Russell. I think it used to prove quite well for me, and now it hasn't really, but I'm still sticking to it.
Fair enough. We'll see if it comes good. I mean, I think they're going to be quick, so there's a fair chance. Meanwhile, I've gone for Nico Hülkenberg fastest lap. I think he's going to be up there in the points, and I think he's going to bang the fastest lap. I think Haas are pretty good when it comes to bleeding speed off their car. It's a circuit that's easy to get a rhythm up at. We could see Hülkenberg pit late on. He'll do like an extended double hard strategy and then go for softs toward the end. Boom, smack in a really solid fastest lap on low fuel, and everyone's gonna be like, "Oh damn!" And yeah, I think that's what we're gonna see. It'll be his sort of application to replace Perez for the second half of the season.
Super sub.
Yeah, wilder things have happened in this sport. Speaking of wilder things, we get to our wilder predictions. And Timo, I think we've sort of all seen where yours is going.
Yeah, and I do think that this is probably one of my more wild predictions for the wild predictions, and lives up to what I was saying a couple of weeks ago, maybe, that I need to start getting bold with these as the season goes on. So I think this is a good place to start. I'm going to say that it rains and the race leader runs into the back of an Alpine because you can't see it thanks to the Deadpool Wolverine livery, and thus changes the entire nature of the Grand Prix. I'm fine writing that into your Excel sheet.
I don't know how I'm going to fit that one in there. What's the weather supposed to be like this weekend?
No idea.
Spa.
I didn't need it to rain for at least a few minutes so that this can happen, and the rest of the time it can be bone dry for all I care.
Let's see.
Yeah, to be fair, you have put that it rains. You could have said it's, you didn't have to say the weather. You could have just said the race leader runs into the back of them. Maybe they just don't see them in sort of the really wooded areas. It's too dark.
How into the wooded areas are they? They're too far, I think, at that point, though.
Yeah, I think at
Well,
that point, if you're in the wooded areas, you've left the circuit and had what can only be described as an
never mind the
almighty
cat among the
accident.
trees, the F1 car's in there. That's not good.
Ooh, Friday, rain 65%. Saturday, rain 83%. Sunday, partly sunny with cloudy spells, 42% chance of rain. So you might struggle for the wet on Sunday, but you could get lucky with it through the day on Friday and Saturday. Ellie Mae, your wild prediction is actually also quite wild, I think.
I initially went pessimistic and decided to put all RB and Red Bull drivers out of the top 10. But then I realized that we usually make quite pessimistic wild predictions, so I usually then
I don't
try
know
to
what you
put an
mean.
optimistic one. So I said all RB and Red Bull drivers in the top 10 instead.
If I wasn't happy with my bold prediction, I would have looked at yours just then for inspiration and gone, oh, wouldn't it be funny if Ricardo won a race this year before Perez? But I think I'll leave that for a week or two.
Well, it's like Mercedes, Ferrari, and McLaren all now have both drivers won a Grand Prix. Red Bull
I think if you told us that at the start of the year, we'd have been very surprised. So to see all four of them in the top 10 would be quite amusing and quite the bounce back, actually, after last weekend, considering just everyone seemed to have trouble with their car at some point in time. If it wasn't the car, it was the strategy. So for them to actually then get it all together and actually finish inside the top 10 would be quite something.
I mean, they had
And
three drivers in the
I'm
top
waiting
ten.
now for three of them to do it, and then you. Well, that was I was going to say it's going to happen now where. Anyway, it's very close, and then something happens at the end of one of those P11, and you're like, oh, you bastards.
P11
Well,
will
I'll
never
be even more
escape. And it's
annoyed.
going to be Perez.
Yeah, I'll be even more annoyed if it's that they all aren't in the top 10 because obviously I initially went for that and then swapped it.
They completely invert it. See, I've gone for one which. The inverse of which is incredibly likely, which
You
is,
copied me from last week.
yeah, I've gone for Sauber double points, the inverse of which would be Sauber no points at all, which is incredibly
Which is all
likely.
guaranteed.
Yeah. I don't know. Look, the odds are stacked against them. Surely they're going to score points at some point this year. They aren't going to go completely pointless. Like, last team to do that was Williams in what, 2018, 2019, I want to say off the top of my head.
But
Surely,
if they
surely
were
they're going to
in,
score points.
but if they were in Pointless, the TV show, they'd be winning right now.
They're
And
not.
I'm
They're
sure they could use those
2024
pitiful
Formula One
sums
constructors.
of prize money to get more updates for their car that don't work.
If
How
you.
about
at the end of the season, we give them the pointless trophy?
I think that'd be a
No.
great crossover.
I was going to ask if. You put your drivers onto a quiz show or something and they won some prize money. Does that count against the cost cap or does that count as like sort of a hidden monetary asset? Like,
I
could you
think
get
you just
Bottas on
automatically have to
tipping
give it to
point?
charity because you're a celebrity on a game show and therefore you're pretty much obliged to give it to charity.
Yeah, but look at how
Well,
badly Stake
something
are
that, which
doing.
I
They are a
suppose you could
charity at
count
this
stake
point.
as,
Yes, yeah.
yeah. And
Something that isn't in the cost cap is entertainment. So you could classify that as entertainment, but it's not included.
She's the lawyer. She knows the loopholes that can be exploited here. So that makes a hell of a lot of sense.
So she's
I
going to go into
say,
campaign finance law at this rate.
yeah, we get Zhou Guanyu on the weakest link and away we go. I think we can solve Stake's problems here.
Ironically.
I
No, we
think
need Perez on the weakest link. I think you get all of the people that we're all thinking about right now on there, and then we see who actually is.
I think we'd see Alex Albon
If we
voted
could
off really
arrange that for
quickly.
comic relief, that would
Oh,
be great.
an F1 weakest link would be good. They did an F1 pointless a couple of years back, which was a load of
No, that was us, Jesse.
faces. No, they did F1 fa like people from F1 on pointless. I think they even had Murray Walker on it as well. And that was quite good. Go dig out the footage of that. It's probably floating around on YouTube somewhere. But anyway, we've made the weakest link joke. We've made the jokes. We've pretty much drawn ourselves to the perfect point to conclude this week's podcast on. That's all we've really got time for. Kept it relatively short and sweet for you. In the meantime, if you want any more from us, where can we be found, Timo?
You can find me over on Is It Fast or Ever. I'll have a report of some kind of the Formula E doubleheader season finale in London that I was at last weekend. That'll be out at some point, but not too distant. And you can find me on The Curbs, where I've got a couple of new episodes coming very, very soon.
Lovely stuff. Ellie May, where could the people find you?
I haven't really done much in the last 24 hours since we've done our last podcast. So
you mean to tell me you haven't scaled Everest in that time? You haven't been out and solved world hunger? You had 24 hours. What have you been doing with your day?
Working mainly. I earned money.
Okay, fair enough. Yeah, that's a good answer.
Yeah, but I was just going to replug that I have a Goodwood post out. I should have more out. So just keep an eye out.
Lovely stuff. And if you want more from me, you can find me across social media as at Jesse on Cars on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok. I've got Goodwood photographs coming out soon as well. I've got my rolls of film back from that. And you can also pick up the latest issue of Classic Car Weekly, which dropped today on the day of recording and will still be on shelves tomorrow. We've got all the production secrets of the P38 Range Rover, the strange second edition to the Range Rover. And it's a troubled times. There's other interesting bits and pieces in there, as well as potentially the stabilization of the classic car market. Why now is a good time to be buying. So that's all we've got time for this week. Shout out, of course, to our listeners in Ichihara in Japan. New one to add to the list. I don't think we've actually had any listeners in Japan for ages, ever, possibly. So lovely to have you. Thank you for joining us, and we hope you'll join us for our review of the Belgian Grand Prix in a few short days. Have a fantastic weekend and enjoy the Grand Prix.